It's May 5th, 2014, and this is episode 77 of Free to Play. My name is Brian Belita, and I do not have anybody mowing their lawn outside of my house right now. But I am joined by Mark Bradshaw.
I'd just like to announce that for the purposes of today's podcast, I will be digitally represented by Kevin Spacey, but using my own voice. We couldn't afford Kevin Spacey's voice.
Imran Khan.
I'm the angry square.
That's sure. I mean, because of the lawnmower?
Sure, why not?
All right. Big Dave Owen.
I'd just like to go ahead and preemptively announce that I'm a racist before any sort of secret tapes come out about it.
Does that work? Can you do that?
I just want the world to know.
It depends. Like, if you can like announce you're racist but against a group that nobody really likes anyway, that could probably help.
Yeah, it's like how what was it? Oh, God, I can't remember the name of that game. It was a beach game with zombies.
What?
Dead something?
Oh, Dead Island?
Dead Island. Like, that was super racist, but against Aborigines.
Yeah. So I was about to say, if you're going to be racist against something everyone hates, is like, is asshole a race?
Yeah, that was, yeah, you ran into like this tribe in the middle of the island.
And then they like, you find out that they caused the outbreak.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
Were they hiding like T-virus?
I forget exactly, like, it's a stupid thing. Basically, if you play that game, just don't go past the beach.
I still stand that it was a...
Did you get past the beach?
I beat the game, yeah. I finished the game. Yeah, with my brother. It's like mechanically, it's really, really fun. Which is why I'm looking forward to Hellraid, which is coming out, which is by the same guys, first-person melee.
What? Their next game was, what was it? Daylight?
Oh, like no, it's Dying Light, I think.
Dying Light, yeah.
So this Dying Light, okay, maybe Hellraid is by some guys that broke off from that team?
Maybe.
I'm not sure, but Hellraid is basically that sort of first-person melee combat, but, you know, medieval fighting skeletons, fantasy stuff. So it looks pretty cool.
Disappointed by the lack of unnecessary umlaut in Hellraid. Could really use it.
A what?
An unnecessary umlaut. Umlaut.
So anyone want to take this one?
Umlaut. The O with the two dots on top of it.
You got like one extra syllable too many.
You mean an umlaut?
What? There's no way it's pronounced umlaut. That's...
Mark, I advise you to go watch A-A-U.
Yeah, I was gonna say we should pause the podcast real quick, look up the video where, you know, it's just the guy that just pronounces things. And then point that to Mark, but we'll do that later. But it's
about that song by the guys who did Dance Song to Save the World, about how they have the extra vowels in their language.
Oh yeah, that one was really good. Yeah, that's a good video. I should watch that. Go, Size Matters, right? I think that's what it was called. Because we have the biggest alphabet. All right, and then also Matt Pierce is here.
So, like, no joke, I totally mow my lawn at this time every day over the summer. Like, this is like the only day. Time I have. Well, not every time I mow it.
Oh, okay. All right. I was like, man, you mow your lawn. Yeah. No, I don't know. I usually do it on the weekends in the morning because it's cooler out. I understand that. But like, I don't know, 7 o'clock in, you know, in the evening on a Monday?
I mean, it wouldn't bother me so much if I weren't recording a podcast right now and also didn't live in a basement.
Right. That's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah.
I used to hate everybody who did yard work in the mornings on weekends. And then the kid came along. It's like, yeah, it's mid-morning now.
I used to I need to be away from these fucking cartoons.
No, you love cartoons.
Yeah. I think at a certain point you stop appreciating kids' Sunday morning cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons.
That's because they're bad now. Like, that's not nostalgia talking. They're like, they didn't. We had Batman and like Fox X-Men and all that shit when we were kids.
Well, once they kind of like mandated that you have to have like educational program on Saturday mornings, everyone just kind of said fuck it and walked away.
And Beakman's World.
Oh man, Beakman. So today or whatever, what time it is tonight? We're going to be talking about Dave's pick for the Little Book Club, which
was Matt's pick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, am I way off here? Oh,
yeah, Dave's pick was Escape.
I'm sorry. I was just going by who the last person is the alphabet in, so I yet again fucked up.
To be fair, it's Matt's O-P, pick because we talked him into it.
Not P-O. Right, got it.
Yeah, it was my pick because I couldn't think of anything and you guys suggested it.
I was instrumental in the pick.
Yeah, yes. I had wanted.
Which is good, because it was a really, really cool game that I wouldn't have played otherwise.
So we're kicking into it, right? So we're talking about Thomas Was Alone, which was Matt's pick for the Illiterates Book Club. So let's talk about Thomas Was Alone.
It's a really, really cool game.
It's a super cool game.
Like, I have no idea what I thought it was. Like, I guess in my head, I thought it was like a Limbo kind of game or something.
Just from seeing stuff, or once you started?
Just from the title. Like, I was thinking, it's in fucking Limbo.
You know what happened to me? Like, when I first heard this game, like, I actually had bought it, like, ages ago on, like, some Steam sale. And I forgot that I owned this thing. So when you guys were talking about Thomas Was Alone, it's like, isn't that, like, Big and Tiny, the Grandpa Adventure? It was terrible. Or am I confusing it with something else? I can't remember. I thought
Is Big and Tiny the Grandpa Adventure.
It's
like Big and Tiny and the Quest for Grandpa's Underpants or something.
Yeah, something like that. It's god awful. And I just assumed, because, you know, at some point indie games decide they need like weird non sequitur names that have nothing to do with anything. I mean
the selling point for Big and Tiny's Grandpa Underpants Adventure was that you had a laser beam and you could cut through stuff and knock it over. So, like, you know, big destructible physics-y terrain. So they probably should have just called it that. Just Big and Tiny's laser beam.
Fucking laser.
Adventure.
Fucking laser adventure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I apologize. It was Tiny and Big Grandpa's Leftovers. So everyone here got that wrong.
Well, that's even worse than Underpants, I think.
What game were we talking about again?
Thomas Was Alone.
Oh, yes.
So anyways, no. So, I didn't know what it was about either. And even when I started playing it, like, it had a really nice pacing of sort of building of information. And there are not a lot of games that I play them. And the more I play them, the more, like, I get invested in the game. Like, usually it starts off and you're fully invested. Like Deus Ex Human Revolution, like right off the bat, you're like, oh shit, I'm in this. You know, you kind of get the entire story, you know, obviously other than, you know, plot twists or whatever. And this,
didn't ask for this.
I did not ask for this. You know, and with Thomas Was Alone, it starts off, I'm like, okay, I'm doing some platforming and there's this narrator voiced by Danny Wallace. And, you know, okay, I'm jumping around. I'm just kind of having fun. And as it went on, I'm like, oh man, these characters, I got really invested
in these shapes.
Yeah.
So this is Tetris the platformer, essentially.
For anyone who does not know, Thomas Was Alone was a game developed by Mike Bithell, who's currently working on a title called Volume. And it came out in 2012 on PC and Mac, and in April 2013 on PlayStation 3 and Vita. And also real quick, I mean, just because this is a very easy, quick point to make, but the music is really, really good. It's so excellent.
Yeah.
It's plucky. It's perfect for it.
It fits every level perfectly. Like, it actually got you motivated to keep going.
Yeah. And that was done by David Houston, I believe.
Yeah.
So, can we get him to record a theme for our podcast?
There you go. You know, the funniest thing about that, and, you know, someone like me who is into their mid-30s, can grouse about this a little. That guy was right out of college when he did that.
That's the that first thing terrible.
He ever did in gaming.
Yeah.
Maybe he peaked. So maybe his entire life is garbage.
That's
so
a good place to peak. Right.
Yeah. I just turned 30 this past weekend on Saturday.
Happy birthday, Brian.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'm 30 now. So, anyways, so I don't.
You're also very sorry.
I'm still, you know, I put out my running and jumping video, so
how do you feel about kids on your lawn?
It's fine if it's my kid. I don't have much of a lawn otherwise, so. All right, so anyway, we were talking about Thomas Was Alone, and so it's a platforming game where you play shapes. The characters that you play, and they all have names, including Thomas.
I think it's more accurate to say you play blocks of some sort, because you're not like...
the laterals.
Yeah. There's no circle or triangles or anything.
No, that's true. That's true. So you play varying squares and rectangle shapes.
You play polygons, basically.
What?
Polygons. You're playing polygons.
Polygons are triangles, though, aren't they?
No, polygons are any, four sides. Well, any...
Uh-oh, here... All right, Matt.
Well, no, a polygon is any two-dimensional shape. Okay. That's
So like a circle could be a polygon?
No. It's not made up of line segments. It's made up of a continuous curve.
Okay.
So you start off playing just one of the characters, Thomas, the titular character. And eventually, as you play, you start finding other characters. And initially, kind of as pacing of learning the game, you're playing just that one character in the level. So you start off playing Thomas. He has, you know, a medium jump. He's whatever color he is. And then, you know, then you find Claire, who is a big square. And the narrator is talking about how she's, you know, she feels kind of sad that she's a large square. She has self-image issues. But then she finds out that she can float in water. And she becomes this alter ego. She becomes Super Claire. So, these characters, these fucking squares and blocks, develop like that, and it's really, really cool.
It's kind of remarkable. It's like you see like some video game companies, like large, like multi-million-dollar video game companies, will put out something, and they spend so much time and so much writing and so much money and effort trying to build characterization, and they have far more characterization in these four like blocks,
yeah,
and just told through like narration.
Like I was talking to somebody the other day about Gears of War, and they're big. What are supposed to be emotional moments of that series.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you laugh.
Yeah. I identified more with a tall rectangle that had a fear of being alone and can't show off to anybody anymore than I did like anything in that series.
Yeah. And there are seven characters throughout the game that you play. It's Thomas, Chris, John, Claire, Laura, James, and Sarah.
And yeah, those are the architects, the main characters.
And there's four more.
Yeah, they set everything else in motion. The other characters that come, Sam, Joe, Team Jump, and Paul and Gray are the other characters that eventually come as a result of the story arc that Thomas and the other, quote, architects put into motion.
Yeah. And it's so great because I was not going into it. Everything I did, I wasn't really asking for the story that I got, which made it that much more of a pleasant surprise. So anyways, but eventually you start playing a bunch of these characters on screen. You can flip between them. I think at most you're only doing three at a time ever.
Maybe there are times.
Yeah, that is true.
There's like a full seven. Yeah, there's a full seven at one point.
Yeah, okay, I think there's like five or six members of Team Jump. So there are points where you're getting up to seven or eight, nine.
Oh, man, it can get really confusing in those later levels.
Yeah. So, and you kind of, you know, you can put them on top of each other and move them along. Like sometimes you need to put them on top of Claire so she can float along water. But it was all really good. It was all done very, very seamlessly. And like I said, the learning curve was just right on that.
Well, I would say like just one complaint about it, and it's more like a complaint about puzzle platforming games in general. Like there's a certain point where they start introducing new mechanics or new like puzzle elements in, and I just can't keep track of them anymore, and I basically lose interest in the game. And it kind of happened with Thomas is Alone.
Well, and this Thomas, like I mean, yeah. what I'm just curious. I mean, what kind of puzzle mechanics? Because really, there's I mean, the only variation is what the different characters can do. I mean, and it's all essentially platforming.
Yeah, I mean, there's still what they can do. Like, you know, John, has the jump function and stuff like that. But no, it's just like I can deal with it if like you introduce like everything at one time, right? But just they keep introducing like one thing and a couple of others. Okay, I'm fine with this. Okay, I know like these are the rules set forth. It's like, oh no, here's another one. You just keep adding on like over time. That's after a while, I just keep. Oh well, okay. Now I'm just confused and bored. I'm going to wonder.
I think that's the ideal way to do it. Just slowly roll it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But when you've got seven different characters all with different play styles all at once.
Yeah.
It starts to become a little overwhelming.
I think what Mark is saying that I guess there was too big of a lapse of time between learning like one new character and then the next time you see him again.
That can happen. I mean, but it's just, I don't know, like just simpler, like fewer elements.
Basically. Yeah, like one of the challenging things was getting a character who can't jump very well up high. So, I forgot what the little one was. But at any rate, there's
Chris, the orange one, Chris, the one that can barely jump at all.
Yeah, so you start learning how to do that with Chris, and then I guess Sarah comes along later, and Claire, for that matter. They can't jump very well. So basically, every time you do anything to get Chris up higher, you then have to do the same thing for Claire, and then you have to do it again for Sarah.
There's a couple of things that don't work. Like, one of my favorite things to do with Chris was to get him to jump on top of Thomas, then on top of John. Then Thomas would be hanging off the edge of John, mm-hmm. so yeah. Chris would jump up again onto Thomas.
Yeah.
And that gets, that pretty much breaks most of those platforms. Yeah. I'm not sure if that was ever intentional, but that doesn't work with Claire because she's too big.
Yeah, there was sort of this order of operations that it's like, oh, there's a tall thing. All right, I got to do this, this, and this in order to get them all up there in a certain order.
And like the very last, not the victory lap level, but the level before that with like, who are their names? Joe and something else.
The couple, Joe and Sam.
Joe and Sam and Paul and Gray.
Yeah.
Like, I did that one completely wrong, and by the time I like realized it was wrong, I had spent like 40 minutes on it. I was like, shit, now I need to go back and just completely... And by the time when I did figure it out, I went back, actually was able to do it in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, there are a few instances like that where you're like, okay, I got this guy. Like, I got Chris to the end, finally. Okay, now I'm going to move Claire. Oh, God, now I need the same...
Right. I need Chris back.
So he can get... Yeah, now she's going to jump on Chris, onto Thomas, and then onto John. Oh, God, I got to do this all over again. Restart.
Yeah.
I didn't like were the ones that don't respawn you, but actually just restart the entire level. Because felt like it was less... I figured this out. It's just a matter of execution, and like sometimes the jump button doesn't always cooperate with me. And
Or sometimes you get the weird water effects where like sometimes if you go down too far in the water, you lose everybody that's standing on top of Claire. And sometimes you're fine, but it's kind of iffy, like exactly what.
Right, because you kind of bob down and then float back up.
When you interact with a moving piece wrong, and then things just sort of like vibrate.
Yeah, or you get stuck to the side of a moving piece. Yeah. Which, by the way, is how I beat one level. I got stuck to the side of a moving piece as it was moving left, but it happened to be moving towards the exit, and when it stopped and I fell, I missed all the water. It's like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. That'll work.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some kind of insane speedrunning hack that they make use of for that.
So the thing I had a lot of fun with was, who's the upside down one?
John?
James.
So like Thomas and James, when you get them stuck together,
you can just
move them left and right and up and down however you want. That's how I ended up beating the final level with Joe and Sam.
Right, just like I got flappy birding it.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about doing that.
Yeah, I got one of them reversed, then got the two of them stuck together, and then you just take the top one and keep jumping, and they'll just keep rising until
it gets to the top. Or the bottom one if you need to adjust your height or whatever.
The first time I did that, I was like, there's no way this is going to work. Like, they can't actually expect me to do this. And like, oh, this works perfectly. Did I break this? Or is this the
buttered piece of toast on the back of a cat conundrum. Yeah.
So I thought they were going to die. If I let them touch it,
they just start like spinning around one another,
Thomas
like
and
in portals.
James are exactly the same shape, exactly the same size, jump exactly the same way. I thought they were going to be like matter and antimatter.
Right? Yeah, because they are complete opposites, even color. They are opposites, color, opposite everything else. James is the inverted Thomas.
You think when they get together, they just start fighting like that one Star Trek episode?
And like even personality wise, like James wanted to be alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thomas just
was. I think there's a lot of, I mean, that's the interesting thing about this game. I've played it now through all the way 4 times. Ooh. I played it twice for this, once on all the way through on the Vita, and then all the way through again with the commentary on.
And that's one thing I need to go back and do is
it's so worth it. And it is funny how you start to like we were saying earlier, you look at these characters like people, and more human than most of the characters that you generally experience in video games. And on subsequent playthroughs, you start to see different aspects of their personality that you might have missed the first time through, or you start to appreciate them for, their journey. Like on my first Vita playthrough, that was the one where I think John became my favorite character, because John has the longest journey. When John starts out, he's like, I'm John. I jump really high, and that's really cool. And I'm the highest jumper, and I'm the best. And I'm gonna help these two little guys here, Thomas and Chris, because they need my help. I'm better than them. And, you know, they cheer for me, and I like that attention. And through the course of the game, you know, John grows because he eventually encounters Sarah, who can jump twice as high as him. And he's not the best jumper anymore, and he's almost not useful in a lot of the levels because he's as tall as Claire. So if you need a stepping stone, she's there, and he doesn't jump as high as the highest anymore. And he ends up
plus they end up making like the levels a bit more corridory.
Yeah,
so,
and he can't.
Like, yeah, so like you have to make him come last.
He gets blocked. Yeah,
and he finally, you know, kind of comes to that final realization of, you know, like he was. It wasn't that he was taking pity on these characters that were weaker than him. It's that he was helping people who needed his help. And that's sort of, you know, is sort of the close to his arc. I mean, everything's up for interpretation. But on that playthrough, I kind of went through that arc with him where he grows to this point where he's like, now I want to help everybody else get to the point where I was, where you can know what it's like to help people. And you know, do more, go beyond yourself and help others.
Yeah. And I mean, even with his story, and I mean, just between the music and everything, like the entire game is this build. And like you get more and more, I mean, into it, as I mentioned before, but also kind of like more and more excited to see what happens and to kind of do one more level, which is, it's very well sculpted.
Like as Dave was saying, like, you know, John made that leap eventually to selflessness. And that's kind of like, that's what I feel like everyone was doing. Like everyone's arc was leading to that situation where the AI evolved the idea of doing something for others.
Yeah.
And that's what let them escape eventually. Like you see those little like narrator things before every like chapters. Like I heard one was clearly an AI civil rights leader.
Right. Yeah.
It was like, it's appropriate that the very first act of emergence was an act of selflessness by the architects.
Yeah,
and that says so much about the world that exists beyond this game. Like, you know that the AI got out, and now you know it's living amongst us. Like we are now living in that world alongside AI that are sentient and, you know, going after the rights that every sentient being is, you know, entitled to have. And introductory quote is probably, that's the one that always gives me chills when it pops up on the screen. Cause I'm never remembering it, even on the fourth playthrough, never remembering it's going to happen. I'm like, oh yeah. You know?
So I wonder if Mike Bithell, if Thomas Was Alone and his new game Volume take place in the same world in the same way. I don't know if they're going to have any little nods like that, because I was thinking about, Steve Gaynor he was talking with Brendan Chung, who made 30 Flights of Loving, Gravity Bone, and is currently working on Quadrilateral Cowboy. And he was talking about how, like, all his games, even though they take place with different characters and sometimes in different time frames, even his game Flotilla apparently takes place in, like, all in the same universe. So this sort of, like, this singular world building that he's done. And I don't know, I mean, just it seems like it might be an interesting thing if Mike Bithell does the same sort of thing, you know, just he makes these couple little games and they're his games, and if he ties them together like that.
I did like how there was no like specific ending to the game. Like it just sort of the Sam and Joe escape, and then you see a monitor and it's like clearly lighting up and then end.
Yeah, that's I do like the Stanley
Parable starts.
Yeah.
There's no real, the AIs got free and apocalypse happened, because there's all this reference to people who are historians or who look back on it in the later on, and so clearly people keep going.
Yeah.
But
though I do like the idea that if Gray was the one who escaped, then it would have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to have more selfish or what's the word? Malcontent ideas for what to do outside.
Yeah.
Right.
I gotta say this though, I kind of dislike that even though you knew you didn't want Gray to get out,
you still
have to get him to the goal for anything to happen at all.
Yeah, you have to actively deceive Joe and Sam and use them to get you through the level. Yeah, even though as a player, I didn't really want to have to do that, but game, you know.
What I used to do,
for my own narrative, is I would intentionally have Gray go to the end by himself. And then if I needed to get Sam and Joe back, I would go get them.
Yeah. Like, begrudgingly, like, oh, God, I guess I need them.
But it was clear that he was going, like, it wasn't intentional 90% of the time. Like, that wasn't the narrative in my head. But at some point it was like, oh, I'm halfway through this. I can see what's going on. I should just keep going with this.
I always held Gray back, hoping that maybe there'd be a way to trigger those portals without him going through them. So he gets stuck. I don't know. Maybe that was a weird idea.
My favorite one of the exits was as you're going to the end with Thomas, he's saying, well, Thomas is going to say something about the black pixel monster as soon as this level is over. And as soon as the level ends, he gets eaten by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, he's going to bring up a concern about this thing. And then he's basically dead.
So one thing, I mean, the game is, of course, it's super charming between the music, you know, the narrator, the visuals just being kind of very simple. You've got these squares and rectangles that are colors, and that the world otherwise is just made up of black blocks. And it's all angular. It's straight up and straight down, other than I think maybe just the spikes were the only thing that were sort of at an angle. But I mean, it's not super subtle, but one thing I think that Mike Biffle did that really made the game, the adjustment that he had to make was worth it like tenfold, the fact that the entire levels are sort of like tilted like 6 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because we're so used to seeing, I mean, there are a lot of puzzle platformers. There are a lot of platforming games, especially free indie games. It's just a genre that people know, and I don't know, maybe it's easier to make than certain other things. And they're all flat. They're parallel with, you know, the edge of the bevel of your monitor, and it's flat. And I think if Thomas Was Alone was like that, it wouldn't have been as charming. I don't know. There's just something about that slight tilt.
Lose some of his personality.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There's just that slight tilt. Really.
There was one that was like really tilted and like kind of zoomed out, and it was actually kind of hard for me to do it.
Right, yeah. it was like a Andy McClure's Jumpman.
Yeah, like a Jumpman level.
It actually reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah.
I can't remember, does the angle like ever play into like how the blocks slide at all? Or is it?
I didn't notice.
I don't think so.
It doesn't. Like it's always constant to their orientation. So
yeah.
That's, he was in the commentary talking about, you know, a lot of people say this game has physics because the jump is floaty or whatever. You do this or that. They bounce in the water like you're floating. But really, there's no physics because all these, they would be sliding all over the place all the time.
Yeah.
If there were physics, that, you know, gravity is the constant of whatever direction, you know, is down for the character.
I mean, it's just such a small shift. But yeah. And then, of course, it's got kind of the volumetric lighting or whatever it's called.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Which is just a nice, very, you know, with this visual style works really well and kind of selling the whole world. So
yeah,
and super, a lot of attention to love and detail.
The backgrounds are all procedurally generated.
Are they?
So yeah, they're never the same twice. I mean, they're always going to be similar, but he's basically taking a bunch of different, you know, icons or little pictures,
level parts,
and constantly, level pieces, and constantly rotating those through the background. So
I did notice that, like, a lot of similarities. I don't know if this is like imagined or if it's just a thing that's going through this community of developers right now. But stuff like similarities between the kind of story this is telling, like narrator driven and like kind of hopeful, like in the face of almost certain oppressive death, like between this and like the Stanley Parable.
Yeah.
Or even like Portal 2, which mainly like most of the narration comes from Wheatley.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's the narrator thing is, I mean, Bastion. I'm trying to think if I've played any other games recently that have kind of done the narrator thing.
I'm sure we have.
I
mean, it's a really simple way for indie developers to keep cost in control and still tell a story.
Because
like if every one of those characters had their own dialogue, that would be like, you know, 13 different voice actors and
right. And if it's not voice actors, then it's you know, text on a screen, and it loses a lot of its charm.
And none of them would sound right. Like, if they actually had, like, a voice for Thomas, it would sound, we would hate it, probably. If they actually had a voice for Claire, we would hate it. Like, they had one voice actor. It's a great voice actor, and it, you know, works out well.
Not only that, there's this weird thing where once you have this kind of storybook narrator telling you the story, you don't mind that it's simplistic or that it's, like, a little fable or a parable. You know, you're kind of cool with that because it's like a storybook.
Yeah, it breathes life into it.
Yeah.
And his, I mean, I think, you know, sort of already said it, but, you know, it's like Danny Wallace, just home run. You know, yeah. I mean, he won a British Academy of Film and Television award for this, you know, like just well-deserved, just an amazing performance top to bottom, you know.
Yeah, totally.
What a cool game.
Yeah, one of my favorite little tiny details in this is, for the most part, the height of the block tells you how high it's going to jump, like how much spring it has in it. But the surface area tells you how much weight it has. So even though Claire is kind of tall, she's really big, so she can't jump very far and she can't move very fast.
She's dense.
Like, I don't think that they actually calculated this out, but they kind of communicate it to you.
Yeah.
Like, Sarah with the double jump, she's super tiny and kind of like a flea jumping around.
Yeah. Like, they directly compare it to a flea at some point, like... Then go back and like, no, not like a flea, like a superhero.
I think one good sort of description or comparison that I saw somebody make was that playing Thomas's Alone was it's not really paced like a traditional game. It's paced like a radio play is the way they put it.
Yeah.
Which is.
I felt it got a little too long towards the end, like right around the last. Yeah. Set of levels. I was like, okay, I'm ready for this to be over.
Did they have 10 levels per segment? Like, was that a hard and fast rule?
Yeah, it's 100 levels. It's 10 per segment.
Yeah. Well, when you say it like that, it didn't feel like 100 levels.
Yeah, I was like, did I seriously go through 100 levels today?
Yeah, it's 100. Starts at 0.1 and goes up to 9.9.
And when now I'm thinking about like narration for 100 levels, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of story packed in there.
Yeah. I do kind of feel like, though, that if they had it to do over again, one of the better decisions they could make is to not so rigidly follow that numerical structure. You know, when things need to be shorter, make them shorter. When things can be longer, let them be longer.
Well, I mean, a lot of people think, like, you know, as if you can fit more content in, then go ahead and fit it. But I think a lot of that probably could have been used as, like, side content or hear from the menu, do these bonus levels.
I'm a fan of like a game just saying what it's going to say and then being done with it. And sometimes that winds up with like a 2-hour game, like a Gunpoint. And sometimes it winds up with a longer game. But I always think it's best to leave the player wanting more. The last thing you want to do is have the player like finish level and say, Jesus, another level after this. You don't want that.
That's in fairness, I was never on the end of like, okay, this is too many. Yeah. But I was just getting close to it. Like, okay, this needs to end soon because we're stretching out this whole thing.
You don't want an Okami situation, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have shaved one level off of every section and probably it would have been the perfect length.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. That's a good point. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I ended up really, really liking this game. Like, it came out last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you put it on your list last year?
I would have
2012, probably. 2012, okay. Actually.
I would probably put it on my 2012 list, certainly.
Yeah, I look back at my 2012 list, and I'm like, I just facepalm. Why was this not? I mean, it was honorable mention for me in 2012, but why was this not on my list in 2012?
I think it was because I played it. Like little puzzle platformer. It's like, oh, it's got.
Right.
Oh, we gotta be hardcore. It's like, not good.
Yeah, I don't remember when.
I don't remember anyone talking about this game either. Like, I listened to a lot of video game podcasts, and
I told you guys about it.
I mean, you did.
No one listened to me.
That's true.
I could just listen. Oh, that's another crazy Kickstarter thing. We're not going to spend money on that.
I don't remember when I played it.
I guess a lot of people played it from the PSN thing recently because it was...
Yeah.
Well, and I think a lot of people played it. It was in a Humble Bundle sometime in 2013. And I think that's where I got it. That's when a lot of people... ended up playing it too. I mean, you know, I know people who that was the first time that Super Meat Boy was in a Humble Bundle was the first time they had ever heard of it. And then they're like, this is the best game ever.
I don't remember if I put it in a. I must not have played it in the year it came out because, I don't think it made it to any of my Game of the Year lists.
Like, looking at it, it's like it was released in November of 2012, so it probably hurt a little bit.
Yeah, by that time, I think we were all really busy.
Yeah.
I don't think I picked up till like it was like $4 on a Steam sale, which I kind of actually feel bad about. You know, sometimes you get a hold of a game on a Steam sale. So I really wish I paid this developer a fair value for this game. Oh well, I'm not going to.
You can buy volume for full price.
There you go.
Yeah, I could totally do that.
But
I can also report if anyone's interested that it plays really well on the Vita.
Cool. It's yeah. It seems like it would. I mean,
I was
yeah.
using my DualShock 4 for like. Was it just my controller, or was there a thing where like if you hold down and jump at the same time, it opens the menu?
That didn't happen to me. The coolest thing about the Vita though is that you can actually just tap on the character you want to pick.
Oh, that's really nice.
That does sound useful.
It was really awesome at times.
That would be really nice. Yeah.
It was like towards the end of the game where I started using the color wheel, but then that kind of got thrown out the window at the very end of the game.
I think because I couldn't remember like which number was who, because like, you know, obviously they're switching if they're on the far left or the far right or whatever, which is sort of how my brain associated with. So I usually just end up going, okay, next. Okay, previous. Okay, that's the guy.
Yeah.
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 I would end up skipping somebody twice because like the camera didn't move there fast enough, so I didn't realize it was on them.
Yeah, more than once that happens, yeah.
I had a big problem with that with Team Jump.
Yeah.
At some point I learned to look at the menu in the bottom right to see who I was selecting, but then you end up with Team Jump, and it's just like, oh, come on.
I made a huge mistake in one of the final levels with Team Jump where I did a... Sometimes you have to do those ones where it just keeps bouncing them up between the portal. Mm-hmm. So, like, it just keeps doing that beeping noise. But I did that one first, and then I did everybody else. It was like, by the end of that, I just never wanted to hear that beeping sound again. Though I did find out, interestingly enough, that gets more and more high-pitched as you get more people on portals.
Yep. Really?
Huh. Yeah.
But no, it's really good, and it'll be really good and stand up visually for a really long time. And you should definitely play it. It's
I absolutely wholeheartedly recommend people play this game.
Yeah, highest recommendation. Even that dog wants to play it.
Yeah,
it's super interested in playing the game.
Dogs love it.
Thomas was alone. Dogs love it.
Dogs
it's super
love
good.
This fucking game, y'all. All
right. Well, let's take a break. We're gonna take a break.
All right, break.
We're back, and I guess it's my pick now for Litter's Book Club, and I am going to pick The Legend of Kyrandia, Book 2, Hand of Fate, a old point-and-click adventure from 1993. It's one of my sort of all-time favorite games, at least just from like a nostalgic standpoint. I just really fell in love with these games, with this series of games by Westwood Studios back in the day, and they really stand out in my memory as some of my favorites. That's what we're gonna be playing. It's a point and click adventure. It's on Good Old Games. I think it's the only official place you can buy it. It's like $6. And I'm a little scared because it's been a while since I replayed it, and it kind of does, I think, have that old point and click adventure mentality. Like, you gotta, all right, maybe I should put this fucking scepter with this rock and that'll make what I need.
So have a walkthrough handy, basically.
You can. I don't know that you... I remember this one, you didn't really need it. A lot of it is kind of sped out. But yeah, have a walkthrough if you want it. I mean, part of the fun is just kind of enjoying the visuals. And the soundtrack by Frank Klepacki is super, super good. It's so good. I love it a lot. So, yep, that's what we'll be playing. My pick.
All right.
Pass. Now, am I gonna be lost if I haven't played Book 1?
No, you will not be.
All right.
They're a lot different. I mean, you can if you want to. I mean, there might be a pack for like all three games, but no, you won't be lost if you're just playing Book 2.
Are we headed down a dark path where now we're going to be stuck with just the second part of this story, and now we're going to be driven mad until like finish like the other two parts?
Maybe. I think when I like first played these games, I played the second one first, and then went back and played the first one, and then the third one whenever that came out. And you play a different character in each of the games, sort of all sides of the coins. So, yep. So what have you guys been playing?
Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing Dark Souls 2, too.
As well.
How far have you gotten?
I'm not very far. I finished up... I forget last time we talked. Did I finish the Valley of the Giants?
No, you were still in the beginning of it.
Okay, no. So I finished that up. I beat the giant. The last giant. I feel kind of like a dickhead, but you know, he was trying to murder me.
Yeah,
so, is this a Shadow of the Colossus situation where you're made to feel bad about killing this guy?
I mean,
not really. He's just there, and like you kill him, and then he's not there. He
ripped off his own arm to try to beat me to death with it. So.
So he's just minding his own business, and you, the asshole hero, come and just
pretty much.
Well, in fairness, you needed his soul.
Well, yes. Yeah,
so I did that, and then I went to Hyde's Tower of Flame, and I beat the Dragon Rider. I think, is he the fat guy
that you fight? Yeah, fat guy is the rider.
Okay, so I beat the Dragon Rider, and I did that bonfire up top, and then I got to the next bonfire, which I think is right before the gutter. No, not the gutter. It's the area with the pirate ships, I think. It looks like.
Nobody's Wharf.
Okay, yeah, I didn't go all the way out into that cave, but I looked through, and it looked like there was a boat. So
the gutter is fucking awful.
Right, that's the one I think I've seen Matt Lee's playing. And but anyway, so I'm there, and then I stopped after my second attempt to kill the Dragon Slayer.
Yeah, he can be kind of rough if you don't have a build for dodging.
I'm sort of built for it, but I haven't quite learned or gotten it yet. So I have a Homunculus Mace +3, and I just got that Knight's Armor set from the basement of Hyde's Tower. So, and that's working a little better for me, but I think I may need to farm some giants or something, because I can 3-shot them with my mace, and I don't know, maybe summon a dude to help me if I can.
Well, I mean, what you can do is you can go lay out summon signs before the giant you've already beaten, and then let people summon you to help.
Yeah.
Which is a good way to get a whole lot of souls and also just be nice.
Okay.
Also get humanity back so you can summon other people.
Yeah, there's still a lot of stuff I don't quite understand about the game. So
ask away. I'll be happy to.
I guess my one question as a cleric is, how do the spells work? I get if it says 3, I only have 3, and then I have to buy a new set, right?
You have to. You can either use an item to refresh spells, or you can just go to a bonfire.
Ah,
It'll refresh those.
Okay, so I have the heal spell that you get as a cleric says 3 uses.
Yeah.
So if I use up 3, next time I hit a bonfire, it'll refresh the spells.
Should. I'm assuming it works like any other magic.
Okay. That makes me a little less apprehensive to use them, because I'm I don't know. It's pretty easy to get souls, I guess, to buy them.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only question I have. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff, but I saw a nice little tip guide for clerics that just said, okay, you should invest your stat points in this or this, because that's one thing I'm always terrible at. Even with Torchlight 2, one of the things I hated and really appreciated about Diablo not making me fiddle with stat points was I don't know where to put this stuff for my guy.
So my thing is always I'm always sort of okay, I'm going to focus on these things. I'm going to be amazing at these 3 things.
Yeah.
And then halfway through the game, I'm like, oh, I didn't know this stat governs this, so I'm going to put a couple of points in here. Yeah. Or, oh, I found this really cool piece of armor, but I can't really wear it, so I need to put a couple of points in here. Right. And suddenly I have a lot of points in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So how focused I was is completely out the window.
But there's also the danger, there are stat caps in this game. So if you want to go to intelligence, if you hit 20 intelligence, then you should stop, because the increases between 20 and 40 are negligible. So at 40, they start getting decent again. But there's this vast swath of 20 points where it's basically you're just throwing your points away. So if you're going to be a caster, you just need to stop at 20. And the game, of course, has no intention at all of telling you this. This is all information that people had to glean out of hex editors or just playing the game constantly.
Yeah.
That's actually something I really do like now about how a lot of this stuff is apocryphal and it's being passed around by people who are playing the game. I was helping people run the Lost Sinner boss, and there's an illusory wall not far in front of him. So every time I try to help people run that boss, I try to show them that wall, but not everyone gets what I'm trying to show them.
So is there something you have to do if something says an illusory wall? Because I know when you go down the elevator in Hyde's Tower into the basement, I saw a couple messages saying illusory wall. So
of those are just trolls.
Yeah. Okay.
Most just assholes.
Yeah. 99% of them are going to be you have to hit A or whatever the use button is to
use. Ah, okay.
And then some of them you need to roll in or hit them.
Okay.
I would always try that last, because durability is really rare in this game.
Yeah.
So you you don't want to go around hitting every wall.
There's roll barrels into them and they'll blow up.
I haven't needed to repair anything yet.
You it recovers every time you go to a bonfire unless it breaks. Like, have you gotten that message like so-and-so is at risk?
There is one item that I had break. I think it was one of the pre-order ones. It was like the yellow quartz sword, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess it might have had a really low durability because it broke really quickly, I seem to remember.
Or all my stuff just broke. Like, last time I turned out a game off, like, there's a part I'm in Dranglake Castle. And there's this room with three knights, and knights aren't so bad one-on-one. Yeah. But three of them on a narrow staircase above a pool of, I'm not sure what it is, it looks like vomit, but it breaks your equipment when you get into it.
Acid, probably.
Yeah. So he knocked me off into that, and I had to run out of there, and now I need to go grind some souls for 15,000 to repair my recovery ring.
Oh, God, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dragonlight Castle is really, really hard. Like, there's one room with, I think it's about 12 soldiers. And if you kill those soldiers near doors, you don't get their souls. Instead, those souls go to the doors, and those doors open up where Ruin Sentinels are.
Yeah.
So the Ruin Sentinels show up later in the game?
Yes, as regular enemies.
Ah, that sucks. See, that's where I'm actually currently stuck, is the first Ruin Sentinel boss fight.
That's definitely, like, that's a big choke point. Like, I took so much time there.
So, I mean, but I'm, no, I was just going to say, I'm just kind of playing through at my own pace, just kind of taking it in stride. Like, if I, you know, if I'd, like, die more than twice on a boss in, like, one sitting, I'll just be like, you know what, I know I'm going to get frustrated. I'm just going to step back, go play something else, and then just I'll just try it again later.
Well, I spent an entire night on the Ruin Sentinels. Central guys, and it's like it's everything I hate about boss fights. Like, I love the part in this game where you're just exploring this dead city, and like you're trying to find the best way to like clear out these rooms, and you're just exploring and how, oh god, I hope to find this bonfire before I die and have to lose all my souls. But you get to a boss fight and now you suddenly have to play the game a different way, or you can't play the game anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, Dark Souls is boss fights though, like.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you can't spec just for exploration. You have to spec for combat too, because you're going to run into those choke points.
Yeah. But yeah. So other than Dark Souls 2, I've been playing Mario Golf.
How is that?
God, it's Mario Golf. It's exactly what I needed, which was more Mario Golf. And it's portable. There's some additional stuff from the GameCube version, which was the last one that I played. Like, there are these items, I think in Mario Golf for GameCube, there's only, you know, regular shot and then power shot. And this game adds items like a boomerang, which, you know, gives you a super slice or draw or whatever. And the bullet bill power up, which is, you know, you power straight through in a straight line on the same level. You know, you can burn through bushes and stuff. So those are pretty nice touches. Gave them a little more flexibility to make the courses unique. And then I guess there's like a, what is the quote unquote RPG mode? Although it's not really, I mean, I don't think there's any leveling up of characters, but you can play as your me and you can enter tournaments and stuff and earn gold coins to buy items and outfits for your me. So it's kind of got that standard Nintendo me fare, which is nice, you know, adds a little bit of longevity to it. Longevity?
Sure.
Longevity.
Umlaut.
J sound.
Longevity to it. Which I appreciate, which is nice. And then, of course, now, this didn't even occur to me. Maybe I didn't read about it or whatever. But, you know, in the last year or so, we've seen this uptake of things like daily challenges, like, you know, the Spelunky daily challenge, or Legend of Dungeon also has like a daily dungeon seed, Race the Sun. And this has like weekly tournaments, you know, so you enter. You know, you get a score as you're playing, you kind of see the ghosts of other people's, you know, plays as they go through, which is kind of a nice little feature. And then you kind of upload your score. And then I guess there's a ceremony that I don't know what happens if you can't attend it. But so there's sort of this global scoreboard and these weekly
scoreboard,
just like a halberd. And, you know, it gives you a reason to revisit it and for a nice kind of new little competition to be able to do. So it's they're kind of online and community features are a very nice touch. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm not very far into it, but I mean, if it's anything like the last Mario Golf game, I'm going to be playing this for a long fucking time, because I love me some video game golf.
So I also have been playing that game, and the thing that got at me is I haven't played a Mario Golf game since the N64, so I didn't know anything about Toadstool Tour. And so I got to this, and the first thing the Mario Golf mode told me to do was to go play the RPG mode in order to unlock more courses. So I went and did that, and I've played the Forest course now 4 times.
Uh-huh.
So I've played it once in Mario Golf, then once to get a handicap, and then once to do a handicap tournament.
Yeah.
And then wants to do the championship to actually unlock the thing for Mario Golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's a lot of extra work to do. I guess I don't have to establish a handicap again.
No, now that you've established a handicap, you don't have to do that for every course, so.
I tell you, playing the same one over and over again, it was kind of getting repetitive, but
yeah.
I mean, you can always practice.
Like, just move on to the next one. I mean, you don't have to do the same one back to back.
Practicing was a good idea, though, because I needed that. Did you also just immediately go to manual mode?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, oh, wait, I can't control backspin or topspin.
Yeah. God, I love that so much. BB, BA, ABA, AA. What was I going to say? So one of the other things, one of my favorite things in Toadstool Tour was like kind of the little gimmick modes. You know, they had like a par 3 course, and they had a closest to hole mode competition. And then they had like the ring mode where you try to navigate and hit your ball through the rings, you know, that litter the course. So they've added a couple at least for the online tournaments, and you can probably customize it on your own too. But like, you know, limited character tournaments, so you can only be Mario, which I don't know, I guess levels the playing field. Or limited item tournaments, so you only have a certain number of items. Or there's like a gold coin collection tournament, so you kind of go through hitting your ball, trying to get the gold coins that litter the course. So nice little variations to your typical, you know, stroke play.
Hehe.
Yeah. Clubs and balls.
Play.
Yeah. So I haven't had a lot of time since it was my busy birthday this weekend, but I managed to play a good chunk today, so I can't wait. I already got the DLC because I know I'm gonna get my money's worth out of this.
You buy the season pass?
Yeah, I did.
So what does the DLC do in this game? Like, everybody is complaining about being like this odious thing that's going to destroy Nintendo and gaming. And it's like,
so the game itself is $30, which is, I don't know, is it like low for your usual?
It's more than like $40, yeah. But okay.
Yeah, it's like $10 lower, and then the DLC is $15. And the DLC, in and of itself, is like an entire another Mario Golf game as far as the content. Yeah. So
I was about to say, for like another $15, it should be like half of the game itself. Like again. Right.
For me, it's well worth it. I mean, you can buy the courses like individually, but I think it's like 3 courses, but each one has, I don't know. I'm not sure of the numbers, but yeah. So the DLC is new courses and new characters.
Is there like a dog you can hustle and make you and like destroy like financially to like get the games cheaper?
Yeah, pretty much.
You can't barter with Rusty on that one.
So I put about 40 minutes into Child of Light.
Yeah. How was that?
This is probably a totally personal thing, but I think I love that game because it's so ridiculously charming.
How's it play exactly? Because I don't want to buy it, but I haven't played any of it yet.
Quick aside, I just realized and noticed that one of the DLC characters is the, what's the name of the rabbit guy from Link Between Worlds?
Nabbit.
Nabbit. No, that's different. No. That's a different guy. That's from the rabbit guy from New Super Mario Brothers. U.
Yeah. So, anyways, he's one of the characters. So, yeah. Okay, go on.
So that game plays like it's basically a side scroller until you touch an enemy.
Okay.
And then you go into a turn-based active time bar battle.
Let me ask you something. Did you ever play Valkyrie Profile?
Yes.
Does it play like that?
From what I can remember of the side-scrolling part of Valkyrie Profile, yes, I don't remember anything about the battles.
Okay.
But I do know you go to a separate screen and you do the turn-based battle stuff.
Okay.
So, like, this game, like, the setup is you play as a little girl named Aurora. And very beginning of the game, in the intro, she dies. Like, wow. she gets some sort of sickness, some medieval pneumonia, and passes away.
She gets a paper cut.
And she wakes up in what she thinks is a dream, but I'm not quite sure, and meets a little flame companion, and everybody in the game only talks in rhymes, which can get a little strained, but for the most part, it's pretty charming. And so, like, with every power she gets, she's like, I've always wanted to use a sword. It's just a dream. I'm just going to use a sword. Or, I've always wanted to use magic, and hell, it's my dream, so why not?
Right.
And it's, like, very, very beautiful art, very, very beautiful music, which is, for some reason, when you do screen, or the recording thing on the PS4, Ubisoft locked it so you can't record the music. Which is the dumbest thing, because it's probably, like, the best thing about that game.
Yeah, they probably don't have the rights to stream it.
What are they selling, the soundtrack?
I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, obviously one thing that a lot of people do is they rip music and toss it up on YouTube so you can listen to soundtracks. So,
it's apparently,
I don't know.
It's apparently composed by someone named Coer de Pirate.
That's a pretty good name.
It's actually, it's written pirate, so maybe, I don't know, but whoever they are.
C-O-E-U-R?
Yes.
So Heart of the Pirate.
Yeah. French Heart of the Pirate.
Yes.
So.
French game, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a French studio?
Pretty sure.
Like, I know it's the same UB tools that that the Rayman team uses, but...
Yeah, the UB art stuff. It looks a little less hand-drawn and a little more 3D model-y, but it looks really nice. And I started that game on hard because everyone complained that it's way too easy on normal.
Can I just tell you that I am incredibly, like, eye-rolly about that name change thing?
Where casual they changed, and experienced?
Yeah, they changed normal and hard to casual and experienced, and it's like, just get over it. Who cares what the labels are?
Apparently reviewers did.
Really?
And lot of them docked the game because the default difficulty was too easy.
I'm probably going to play it on the default difficulty because I don't have reviewer amounts of time to play everything twice.
Yeah.
Filthy casual scum ruining our industry.
I would not recommend it on hard unless you really do want a challenge, because the first boss destroyed me.
Okay, so this is one of the things that always scares me away from RPGs, is when, the first boss typically destroys you because you have no idea how the combat works yet, or because you just haven't done enough grinding for the first boss yet.
Yeah. I mean, my big mistake was I went into it without full health, and that was a bad idea, because I was on hard.
Yeah, anything where it's like, oh, I forgot to go recharge my health because I didn't know there was a boss around the corner, and now I'm fucked.
I mean, this was pretty obvious. It was like, do all this thing, and then these two giant statues will wake up.
Yeah. I don't know. That's one of the things that always gets at me about role-playing games. What's the save system like? Can you save anywhere, or...?
I haven't noticed manual saving. I just checkpoints every, pretty often.
Okay. That's usually the saving grace of something like that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that I just find incredibly charming thoroughly, but that may vary from between features and the person, so.
Yeah, it seems to be getting kind of middling reviews.
I would say divisive more than middling.
Yeah. I guess
some people really love it.
But the voices that I'm listening to are all middling. Yeah. But yeah, it does seem like there's not a consensus on it. Certainly, but it's the kind of game that I almost bought it just to support the idea of it.
Yeah.
You know, this system that they can use to put out games like this that are low risk, you know, I think it's or lower risk than fully developing on an independent platform. Just put out more interesting ideas, even if they don't end up being the best game that you've ever played.
Right. Like I wanted, part of me wants to encourage Ubisoft to just do things that are not Assassin's Creed for a while.
Yeah.
And like to do stuff like Blood Dragon and Child of Light is, I think, good forward step for them.
Well, the thing that gets at me is I also would like to encourage them not to do Rayman anymore. just cool it on Rayman also.
It's only been two games with a billion ports.
Yeah. But because of the delays, it seems like they've been around forever.
Rayman 2 is definitely on every system known to man.
Yeah.
I thought Rayman was the dumbest character design when I was a kid. And he's still a really dumb character design, now it's cartoony.
I think it's just it stems from the European look. and we're not used to that. So it's like, this, why does his arms not work right? Why does his face not look right? This isn't Western. It's not Japanese. Why? What's wrong with his art? So that, and like, James Pond will always look weird.
I like that phrasing. What's wrong with his art? Yeah. Dude, your art is broken.
Your art's broken. Your art's bad.
I think it's one of those things that, like, Rayman looks better as a character in retrospect. Like, he looks better when you would know he's an old character than he does if you saw him freshly new today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But seriously, Child of Light's really neat.
Nice.
Get it on Steam sale.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
So, Dave, you want to pimp your two videos?
Sure, yeah. I played a couple of games this week. One of them was called David. It's a great name for a game, if I say so, you know. And it's really cool. It's a minimalist platformer boss fighter. So people have, you know, knee-jerk reaction of a lot of people is like, it's like a demake of Shadow of the Colossus. And it kind of is, I guess. But it's a really neat game. It's a touch game originally, but they did a really good job of translating it. You are David, a tiny little square, and you hop around and you defeat bosses, and it's $2. It's on sale for $1 right now. Super simple.
It's Thomas really... was alone with combat.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah,
I'm just kinda. Kidding. It's totally no,
not. It's not. No, there's no narration, no story, no nothing really. You're just, you are essentially, it's a very thinly veiled, well, not even thinly veiled. It is a not at all veiled religious reference. In the beginning, you are charged by God to defeat evil, essentially, and you are given a slingshot type weapon with which to do so. But it's really great, and highly recommend it. And played Glitch Space also, which is a first-person programming game, which I talked about a couple weeks ago, I think, which uses like a node-based programming system. It's really interesting. It's easier to just watch the video, but I really, really enjoyed it. I think it's got a really cool hook with that mechanic. They just need to do some more window dressing around the edges to make it more than just like a 2-hour, you know, oddity. But yeah, both of those videos turned out really well. I was really surprised. Yes. But the other thing that I did of note with you, Brian, was we attempted to compete in the Legend of Dungeon daily. Last week, which, you know, went okay.
Dave and I were thinking about doing this dueling dailies thing, in which we played Legend of Dungeon and Legend of Onion, and see who can get the deepest, the fastest. So race down into the dungeons, and it led to some pretty hilarious moments. So I don't know, maybe we'll like actually do a thing maybe later this week.
Yeah, it could be cool. I'm gonna work out the streaming stuff, figure all that stuff out and see if we can get it, you know, get it in a way that's going to work for both of us. I know there are some different things you can do. You can broadcast two sort of streams on the same channel. There are all sorts of possibilities that could, you know, make it worthwhile, but that's pretty much all I've been doing.
Cool. Did we do Matt?
I've been playing this week is Thomas is Alone and Mario Golf. So we've covered the two games.
Cool. Nice. And Mark, anything you want to mention?
I guess not. No.
Before we go, breaking news. I told you so. Oculus just announced that their plan with Facebook is to do a billion-person MMO where everybody's connected in the cyber world.
Is that actually a plan, or is that like, you know, this would be really...
That is the plan as elucidated by their CEO.
I've seen enough anime to know where that goes. It's going to end with no one being able to log out, and then everyone going into comas.
With the incredibly pretentious and I can't believe you said this poll quote of, do we want to be a Game Boy or an iPhone? How are you in a gaming company and you say something that stupid? And it's like, do you even know why these things are different? Do you know that they're not even remotely the same sort of thing at all?
Maybe that's what Carmack stole. He stole pretension from Bethesda.
Cool. All right, dudes. Good game. We'll be playing Legend of Karania, Book 2. And thanks for listening. Go play Thomas Was Alone if you haven't. It's super good, as you heard.
Bye.
Bye. Goodbye. Goodbye.